Shall we study just one word at a time?
Yes.
Yes.
Abandon.
Abandon. Oh, yes. Yes.
It should be from the very beginning. Otherwise, we think that when it's reached such stage, then it is abandoning. But actually, from hearing, the understanding abandons the ignorance, little by little. And all good deeds abandon all unwholesome moments, but from stage to stage, little by little, until now, seeing is just a reality. Visible object is just a reality. But it's impossible to just realize that because of very, very thick and great ignorance and attachment. That's why each word of the Buddha, condition right understanding, only right understanding can just eliminate the ignorance and attachment and all kilesa. That's why even just one word, abandon or abandoning, it doesn't mean that anyone can reach that stage of abandoning the idea of self immediately, but it has to begin from moment of hearing, considering, studying with the idea of non-self. Otherwise, the I comes in again and again and again, interested in words and speech and story, but actually each word of the Buddha should bring one back to this moment. It has to be very natural and nature. See, otherwise it's mixed or underlined with the idea of self all the time, like seeing now. The self is there, but not at moment of seeing, but it's there, already to arise at the time when it can be conditioned. Like only 3 moments after seeing, just 3 moments, akusala is there. Unknown, because it's like asava, intoxicant. It doesn't show up as when there is the idea of something, because only visible object can be object of attachment because of the accumulation of ignorance and attachment. So it will take quite a long, long time, and it has to be truthful to this moment. It's not self. It's not other moment at all. It's not moment of studying or hearing or trying to do something, but it's moment of, because of hearing the right words, it gradually eliminates little by little, because it comes in little by little after seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. One so, word.
Achan, it sounds like that without detachment, there's no development of understanding.
Certainly, that's why it's the second truth, second noble truth. That's why Panya, the developed one, can see attachment, because now there is attachment, but it's unseen.
So the path is both understanding, eradicating ignorance, and detachment, countering attachment.
Naturally, by conditions.
But when you say without detachment there can't be development of understanding, that doesn't mean there has to be detachment first.
No.
Just clarifying. So, because they happen together, when there's understanding, there's detachment.
So, be truthful to the truth right now is parami, little by little. Without the development of parami, it's impossible to get rid of the idea of self, who sees or thinks or whatever. So, it has to be very natural.
That whenever wholesome states arise, there is the abandoning of unwholesome ones. But we were discussing before about how when we're talking about even partial abandoning along the way, unless it is understanding of reality, it isn't abandoning because it's not leading towards the path at all.
So without right understanding, there is no way to get rid of the self, Because no matter how good deeds one has done or accumulated, without understanding, it's not parami. So the person who understands the reality from hearing the teachings will know that what life is just the succession of the arising and falling away of realities from moment to moment. And it's gone, each one, completely, never come back, unknown all the time. By understanding this, one sees the value of life is moment of understanding. Otherwise, it's gone, no matter it's wholesome or unwholesome, happy or sad or sorrow. See, everything's gone. From nowhere, from nothing. And then there is conditioned reality, and then nothing again, and never come back at all, no matter what life, because we cannot know last life who we were, but this life is just very short to be this person, only this life, and change, never come back to be this person again. So the best thing in life, one knows, if one doesn't live with understanding, it's always covered up by attachment and ignorance the whole life, not knowing the truth of this moment right now arises and falls away. Without the succession of the arising and falling away, there cannot be anyone here, because just one reality arises and falls away. But since there are conditions for whatever arises now and succeeds very rapidly, so people and things are all around. From moment to moment in life, it's like this because of ignorance and attachment.
And I think, as we were discussing yesterday, the abandoning can happen in between the presence of idea of people and things. So it doesn't mean we have to stop thinking of people and things first.
It's conditioned.
Yes. And it's accumulated, the strong idea of people and things. But despite that, there can be moments of awareness and understanding, which is the abandoning that we are talking of.
It's more than just digging the mountain with the fingernail. Because ignorance and attachment is much more than that. Because it cannot be catched, it cannot be grabbed, it cannot be touched. They are all mentality, which is, we don't know. We are different by accumulation. And how much ignorance and kusala and whatever is there in one moment of citta.
I think there are different kinds and levels of abandoning, because following Sarah's question, a moment of kusala is also, of mundane kusala is also a moment of abandoning.
Are we now abandoning?
If there's any kusala arising,
right,
it's abandoning.
Now, right,
yes.
Now, at moment of understanding only, see? We don't have to think about what is abandoning and how much and what degree, but just now, who can?
I'm just saying the word abandoning has a lot of different meanings. There's temporary abandoning and
right.
Eradication,
right.
Which is the permanent abandoning,
right.
So there's a whole range
mm-hmm.
of...
Yeah. This is just one word at a time.
And one thing for sure is if there's not the beginning of abandoning in this sense now, there will never be the abandoning of Vipassana Jnana or higher abandoning, so it has to
any
develop.
Any moment of right understanding, it abandons.
When you were saying that
just now about Lopa and avicca covering, what do you mean by covering and what does it cover?
Right now, seeing arises and falls away. whisper object arises and falls away? Why can't it be known? Why can't it be directly experienced? Because of not knowing, no understanding and attachment to it.
So how does it cover what? It's still
the moment of arising and falling away of whatever now appears.
No so one the moment there. Of rising and falling
yeah,
away.
No one there. Only ignorance and attachment.
And that's why it seems to be continuous. Because the arising and falling away isn't perceived.
And it will be the moment of understanding what it's meant by being alone. Live alone. As there are many people and things here, it's not alone. But when Panya right there, with only a reality, it's alone. No one, no thing. And it's just like this, so we can see the Buddha's great virtues of wisdom. How could he enlighten the truth of whatever now is covered up? No one can know. No one can know at all without his words.
And it's not just covered up. It's covering more and more.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's why kusala and akusala and mahakriya are accumulated.
And hearing the truth about the way things are is the beginning of the abandoning.
Right. Very little. Because it's only theoretical understanding or intellectual understanding. The truth is like this. That's why patience, keep on, continue on, listen more and understanding, even just very little at a time. Like one holds the knife handle, we don't know, one doesn't know when will it be worn away.
And that hearing conditions reflection, both at the time and later.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's so very natural, normal. Because even right now, if we think about other things, what about that which is gone? Because it has risen and not known. So understanding the truth of reality is not going anywhere else and try to seek and search for reality because it's now. See, ignorance is there which cannot understand ignorance.
We could say that before there can be direct understanding, that there must be understanding that it is now, it is the reality appearing now that needs to be understood.
That's the right purpose of studying the teachings or the word of the Buddha. Just understand one word deeper and deeper. Like abandoning, we think of the moment of that level, but actually without this moment, how can there be such moments? So one understands better and better the right path and the wrong path. because Panya knows when there is akusla and lobha and moha. Otherwise, there cannot be the eradication of lobha or attachment.
And also when it talks about, as we mentioned yesterday, or I mentioned yesterday, about viveka or seclusion as described in terms of the abandonings, the pahanas, we can say that actually because there's abandoning at any moment now when there is understanding, so this is the beginning of understanding what is seclusion of viveka from the very beginning now. So we can see it in terms of the abandoning at this moment. And when we read the suttas about abandoning, seeing, hearing, visible object and so on, referring to the abandoning of the wrong understanding of seeing, hearing, visible object, so leading towards the end of samsara. So again, it's the abandoning of that wrong understanding from the beginning.
That's why, just listen and understand, that's all. Because no one can perform the function of right understanding. Only right understanding can perform its function of understanding. So each word should be studied carefully, because when there is understanding of reality, and then it continue on and on. More right and more right.
So until Sotapanna, the abandoning is abandoning wrong understanding.
Right.
After that, it's abandoning ignorance, because there's no more wrong understanding.
Mm-hmm. But ignorance with wrong understanding also eradicated.
And because we read about how there's also, as we discussed the other day, the abandoning with the development of samatha, jhana is a kind of abandoning. So can one say that when it is right understanding at the level of samatha bhavana, it's any moment now when there is calmness, for example, when there is understanding of metta now, but it's not understanding of reality. Yeah. Can one say it's also an abandoning?
By way of suppression.
So any moment of samatha bhavana, not just jhana, but even from the beginning, is abandoning.
But as John was saying, it's a different kind of abandoning. The abandoning that abandons kilesas is related with pariyati patipati, whereas the abandoning that is of the level of samatha is different.
Even when we close the eye, that can still be seen, right?
As long as there is the cakkhuprasadha and visible object.
Right, because sometimes even it's dark, it's like we see darkness. Or sometimes there's some white light or other color
light. It's the seeing which sees darkness.
Mm-hmm, right. So, because we were also talking about samatha, so when we at night sleeping and before falling asleep, and when we see some light, what does that mean?
Doubt.
Okay. That's the question. Okay. All right. But why sometimes there are different colors? Doubt again. Okay.
Because visible object is different at every moment, no matter a lot of light or little light or no light or whatever is seen, it's just visible object. Whether it's lying in darkness and seeing, or lying or sitting here, it's just visible object that's seen, regardless of how much or little light there is.
But just to make sure we're talking about the same thing, when you said with eyes closed there can still be seeing, could you give an example of that?
Right now, close one's eyes, something is seen, but it's not shape and form.
Right. Not to be confused with imagining that one is seeing a light, for example, because that can happen too. Okay. One can imagine one sees a light, but it not be seeing, it can be just mind or activity.
Okay. Well, I think it's not imagination. Can I see some white light, close the eyes, a small dot of light, but it's doubt, because at that time I feel quite calm.
When it's not right understanding, it's doubt.
It could be kusala without right understanding, right?
Kusala?
There can be still only the 19 jatasika without the banya, right?
When there is ignorance and doubt, it's not kusala.
But even, I mean, kusala has still two types, with right understanding or without right understanding.
If it's not dana or sila, wholesome sila or bhavana, then for sure ignorance is there. So at that moment of just thinking about light, or like a meditator focusing on light, no understanding, it's a kusala for sure.
Okay.
What kind of kusala? Sorry. If it's, you might want to ask, if it's kusala, what kind of kusala? Is it dana, sila, samatha?
Could it be possibly samatha, like excess concentration?
Would you like to call it?
No, but just for discussion purpose.
At that moment there is doubt, and doubt can be understood by panya. Right understanding is not self. That's why before there can be the eradication of the idea of self completely, it has to develop.
But there was
conditions, not by I think about this and that. That's why there should be the understanding of whatever is real is a reality which is not self. At that moment of doubt, it's me.
There was really no thinking. It just, oh, there's a light. And there was no thinking or any further.
When it's not the right understanding of whatever appears, it is self.
Okay.
You said that no understanding, but it can be kusala and it could be samatha and it could be upachara. How can it be any samatha development if there's no understanding at all?
Right.
So even for development of samatha, there has to be very clear understanding of, first of all, what calmness is and how that object calms the mind. It's not like just suddenly have some experience of light and that is samatha bhavana or upachara. Mm-hmm. It's not like that at all. So there has to be clear understanding from the very beginning what calmness is in that case and how that object conditions calm, not just have some experience.
You said it could be, could it be access concentration, which is a high level of concentration, right? No. Not a beginning level. Highly developed. Yes. So my question was going to be, how did it begin and reach that high level of concentration in the first place?
This experience actually happened many years ago. That's when I was practicing yoga, and there was some breathing exercise. So the attention was basically, I was practicing breathing even when I was sleeping. It just happened. I was continuing focused on breathing, and then for many months, and then one night, it just suddenly this light appeared. Wouldn't be right.
Okay. light is one of the subjects of contemplation, but it didn't start with that. It just suddenly appeared. So that means it's not related to the development of that object as object of calm.
And may I ask, what's the value of concentrating on breath as against concentrating, say, on a leaf?
Well, I'm not saying that experience bring a detachment. No, it's not. I'm just curious about what is that. And right, there's really no particular value of that. It's just, oh,
right.
Okay.
So you were talking, what it sounded like you were saying that you were using breath, you were concentrating on breath, that was something of value that led to that experience of light. So, and we talk about development of samatha as in understanding the object of contemplation, how it conditions calm, right? So even if there was a connection between breath and the experience of light, it must be in terms of understanding something about how breath can condition calm, and then the calm being attained.
There was no understanding at that time. I have not really started Buddhism yet. Right? I was just pure practice of the yoga.
So what should be known right now?
What should be known?
What should be understood right now?
Reality.
All gone. Only
okay.
This moment.
Right.
So what should be understanding?
Anatta-ness.
Of what?
Of realities.
What reality?
What reality? That can be directly experienced.
Of what?
Oh, you mean, for example, like seeing now? If seeing does not fall away,
what
then that's...
Now?
Now, sound.
What now?
What now?
What now?
Talking, holding microphone.
Thinking.
Oh, okay, thinking. Right. After seeing, right? After hearing.
When we talk about now, when it's not the object of understanding, it cannot be now. It's gone.
Right, thinking, yes. Mm-hmm.
What Ajahn was just saying is when she says, what's happening now, when we answer seeing, but it's already fallen away. The seeing that we are referring to has already fallen away. So unless there's actual understanding, then it's not actually the present moment that we can refer to.
But thinking also has to fall away, otherwise I cannot continue here.
Yes, but it can be object of right understanding. And everything now can be object of right understanding.
Mm-hmm.
By conditions.
Yes.
So many special experiences in the past, especially if one had meditation practice or something, so not so many ideas of light and this and that that we experience, but actually it's of no value or importance whatsoever because it's totally gone, and the thinking and the doubt and the speculating now is real, but what's speculated about or thought about, what one clings to, is of no value whatsoever.
And that really shows lack of confidence in understanding what appears now. If we're so caught up in ideas about what happened in the past and trying to figure out if that was kusala or kusala, I mean, right now is a reality appearing one at a time. Is there any confidence in understanding that?
Well, since last October in Vietnam, I think there's some more confidence. Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't give up practicing. Right.
Jen, I have a question about seeing visible object. In the commentaries, they say For seeing, there must be different conditions, including contact of visible object at the eye base. And they also say that there must be light. Can you say something about
that? As conditioned to know the shape and form as different things.
Doesn't mean there can't be seeing without light. Yeah. But if there is no light, like when it's darkness, there cannot be any making out of shapes and form.
So that's it.
So it just depends whether there's light or not. So light is sometimes given as a condition in the text, but not always. It's given as a condition, meaning that without light, there can be no making out this or whatever. But I also have a question related to this. Why in the development of samatha is light given as the object of calm rather than visible object? Why is it the nimitta of light rather
because
than
object
of visible object?
Of samatha is nimitta.
Nimitta. Okay, so it has to be nimitta of reality, so visible object. So it's the nimitta of light, but light is an aspect of visible object. So why can it not be nimitta of a concept of visible object?
So what is nimitta?
It's the sign of reality, or the sign of...
So it's different from the actual
reality. Yes.
So it's nimitta.
Yes. But still, it's not clear why it can only be light because it's nimitta, not visible object.
And when there is the idea of someone, it conditions like or dislike and kilesa.
Like or dislike?
Yeah, kilesa comes from thinking about shape and form.
Oh, I see, from shape and form, okay. So without light. So it's implying that because it's light, that it has to be visible object with light there.
So, Victor, you said that since the visit to Vietnam in October, you'd given up practice, which is, of course, very positive. But, of course, and it's the same for all of us, the accumulated tendency that led us to practice in that way has not been eradicated, remains, and can find other ways of expression. So the practice becomes, in effect, more subtle. So even though we've stopped, for example, sitting at a time and place and that sort of thing, but because the accumulated tendency remains, then it still finds ways of expression.
Well, that's a very good point, because it's actually happening for me, because when I still have the accumulated practice from yoga. Yoga actually talk about sama as well. But when they talk about sama, the teacher was telling me it's about physical. Sama, Sambuddha. Sama, actually in Bhagavad Gita, in the yoga book, also mentioned sama. It's called about evenness. So when the yoga, they actually focus on evenness, the space, the rupa space. So I still have the subtle practice of paying attention to if the body is symmetric or not. So, and there's the desire to want to be symmetric. Yeah, they also start with samadhi, right?
Now it can be a reminder of a different kind of sama.
Right. There was no Abhidhamma mentioned. Right.
It's a bit like though when one... We talked yesterday about reading the text or reading some word, like abandoning. It can be read or considered with right understanding or wrong understanding. But just because, for example, if one is told by one's therapist or in a yoga class to straighten one's body, it doesn't have to be of any wrong understanding, but it can be. It just depends. It doesn't mean that because one realizes this isn't the way to follow the path, it doesn't mean that one just slumps or one sits in a crooked way.
One
can still straighten up without any wrong understanding.
But there are also similarities in terms of teaching from yoga, because they also have the Yoga Sutra saying Sukha and Dukkha are both Dukkha. That's something similar to the Noble Truth, right? Everything is Dukkha. That's what Yoga Sutra is saying. Everything is Dukkha. But they didn't really talk about Cetasika and all different kind of Citta.
And no understanding of Dhamma as Anatta, Sukha as Anatta, Dukkha as Anatta.
Right. That's the key difference. That's the main difference, right.
You accumulate the practice of yoga?
Me?
Okay.
Not me, right.
You accumulate that.
Right, there was accumulation, yes.
Do you also accumulate eating?
Eating? Not necessary. Sometimes I don't find it really. Actually, when I practice yoga, I lose
just
appetite.
Just eating, just like when, yeah, eating.
Uh-huh.
The same as yoga. Accumulation.
Okay.
What's different?
What's the difference? Well, if in terms of accumulation, everything is the same.
Just eating and yoga, what is the difference?
What is the difference?
One happens naturally, and the other is being done for
but
a purpose.
According to the accumulation of moments, eating is accumulated too, like practice yoga is accumulated.
Right.
With the idea of self. So it doesn't matter that there can be understanding of what at any time by conditions. It doesn't mean that there cannot be right understanding while doing this or that.
Right.
Just like while cycling or swimming or stretching or
looking, standing, whatever.
We discussed how we, Ajahn and I, are going to stretch more in the discussions because it's better for one. So it's just very natural, any moment, any reality, any time. Otherwise, one's thinking in terms of situation again.
Right. And actually, there is danger practicing yoga because there could be attachment to the body condition.
Is it good for health?
It's good for health. That's
so
good.
So why it's dangerous?
Also, it can be like the body shape, the energy. You want to have a good level
attached,
of energy attachment
attached
arise.
To everything, not
yes.
only that.
Cycling or whilst eating one's lunch. Does it mean you don't eat lunch because there's attachment?
Right.
Just the same.
Well, what I see the danger in this particular case, in your particular case, is that when you seem to believe that there are teachings associated with yoga that's the same as the Dhamma. No, okay.
Of course, it's possible to become over, to give over importance to yoga and to see it as something more than just a physical exercise. But the danger, if there is one, is not the yoga, but the view, the accumulated tendency to attach importance to different things as being having some importance in the ultimate sense, or for the development of understanding.
The reason they also have similarity or the danger is it also talk about detachment, the yoga, and it also talk about the stop of the activity of citta. So it seems like a really complete training on the, it seems that there's a guidance there. The guidance with the destination is no attachment, just eradicate detachment. They also mention that. That's,
do you believe that it does?
Do I believe? What? I believe the truth is ultimately it can be, the defilement can be eradicated because that's the truth. It's because it's happened. There are examples. I don't know if among yogis, but they say yoga is not about asana, it's not about the practice. Maybe Azita can say.
It can be about whatever one's interested in. Like both Azita and I do a lot of yoga. We have for many decades, and I don't have any conflict or problem or difficulty. I don't ask any of these questions because I don't mind what anyone says or thinks. For me, it's just a kind of good exercise to keep healthy, and I have no problem at all with it. It's just like when I go swimming or walking, but I think it's a very good way to stretch and keep fit, and no problem. Like Ajahn was saying yesterday, when there's understanding of realities, any time, any situation is okay. One can go into any temple or visit any place because there's confidence that there are just different dharmas anytime, right. Any place, no matter what one sees on television, no matter what one reads, no matter what the newspaper says, just different dharmas.
Yeah, this is very, very good. That's why I don't practice yoga. Okay, the point is I am satisfied after reading the books and hearing the discussion. So I'm just saying the Yoga Sutra can still attract many people because they also have the teachings that kind of a good system. So they can attract many people. But I agree, all different kind of situation, it just doesn't matter. Because, right.
Wrong view will always attract many people. Right. So it doesn't matter what religion or what teaching it is, it will always attract many people because everyone loves to cling to the self so much. So anything that encourages more attachment to the self will always be much more popular than any teaching about no self and detachment from the idea of self.
Right, Ananta is the key difference, right? Yes.
You mentioned among the similarities, and I know these are only superficial, but stopping the activities of the citta. But I don't think there's any parallel in the Dhamma to that. What did you have in mind?
Right, that's why I never got satisfied with the description. They only said citta vritti nirodha, just means the activity of the citta stopped. But no further explanation. That's why I never find it satisfying. But it does mention about also moha can be eradicated. Right. I think what's really surprised me is they say everything is dukkha and moha can be.
But they have no idea what everything is. They think the body is dukkha or the getting sick is dukkha, but they have no idea what everything is. They have no idea what the reality is that is dukkha. So right. Easy for anyone to say everything is dukkha, but it's meaningless if there's no understanding now of seeing, of visible object, of thinking, of hardness, of different realities that are anatta, just words. And the same with citta. It's no understanding that there is citta one moment at a time, one citta after another, no matter whether it's seeing or hearing or thinking, each moment is citta which arises and falls away, not anyone's citta.
No, the similarities are only very superficial, which is, I think, why yoga teachers like to appropriate terms from the Dhamma and expound it as part of their class, that one has to sit there and listen to this obvious wrong view being promulgated.
And what we know is that the Buddha, because he was familiar with all these ideas and all the Sanskrit terms, so he used the same terms like citta and viveka and dukkha, but he taught about them in the deep, profound way with the Buddha's teachings. He was saying, well, viveka is not just living in the forest. What about viveka now? What about abandoning now with right understanding? So the terms, the names are the same, but the meaning, the understanding is completely different.
I mean, is, for example, if someone said the body is dukkha, that's a different meaning to saying that seeing is dukkha, right?
I think one of the big differences here too is understanding what is a concept and what is real. What are concepts, what are paññatti, and what are, Nina points out in her books very clearly, and I found them really helpful, that difference between sammuti satya and paramatta satya. So we have to use these words, these conventional terms, but often in reading in the suttas about, well, the teachers in the Buddha's time, many other teachers in the Buddha's time, and they were just talking about sammuti satya, you know, conventional truths, and had all their own versions and ideas about these conventional truths, and they had many followers. Yeah, and there's a really good sutta that kind of illustrates this with the Upali Sutta, when this fellow Upali, I won't go into all of it, but the Buddha talks very clearly about what is paramatta satya, and as the Jhan will always remind us, what is paramatta satya now, as opposed to, we can all talk about what is samutti, what is paramatta. I don't know if you're familiar with these terms, but they're really important to have a good understanding of, so that one is not necessarily fooled by what, as Jonathan was pointing out, all these different yoga teachers, they use all the words, the exact words sometimes, but they've got, in the Buddha Dhamma, they're very, very different to what these people are conveying, you know. So, you know, the words are taken over, and it sort of gives them a veneer of, you know, reality in a sense, but they're just words.
What is the difference between attachment to eating and attachment to yoga?
Yoga could be more dangerous.
No, talk about the difference.
They are the same in terms of, in terms of
eating is not dangerous.
It can be dangerous, but
yes. But what is the difference? What is the difference?
The difference.
The attachment to eating and attachment to yoga.
Attachment is the same, but ditti is easier to arise in yoga practice.
Sukhin, if there's more lobha whilst eating or whilst doing yoga, I think...
Ditti, right.
Yeah, it would be possible.
It depends. It depends on the accumulation.
Yes, because it's quite possible to eat and to tell oneself that one is eating mindfully, and that would be ditti.
Is it not I am eating and I am doing yoga?
Same, yeah. It's still I am eating, right.
I think there's more idea of I when one is undertaking something other than
the
regular bodily functions.
What about now?
Right now we are talking about the truth, so...
We are, yes.
At times, yes, yeah. Definitely.
So it can be. It's the same for all, for each, no matter it is yoga or eating or whatever.
But Acharya, should we not distinguish between the eye of lobha, mana and ditti?
It depends. For the one who understands, it doesn't matter. While one is doing yoga, there can be the understanding of whatever is there. Right. It's not limited by this or that, but the truth is the truth. Seeing is there at moment of doing yoga, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking.
It just depends on the accumulation and the understanding, no matter what the activity is. Otherwise, we're setting rules again and forgetting about this moment again.
But sometimes when practice yoga, the body can be heavy at the beginning.
Okay, it can be object of right understanding. when there are conditions, yeah,
right,
anytime, anything,
okay,
depending on ignorance or right understanding only.
Going to think about stopping yoga, because that can be done with wrong understanding.
I'm not planning it; just naturally stop.
Stopping yoga?
I think I stopped already. I stopped already. I think. Right.
Why?
That's what after another wrong practice, I give up this practice.
How was another wrong practice?
I stopped practicing yoga after I went to Goenkaji's meditation camp. Right. What yoga to me is like a moving, because the attention is always on the body sensation.
What about one, now?
Right. So I was just answering Sukin's question about, right, yeah.
And so you stop the yoga,
right,
and to start meditating,
right,
going to meditation,
right,
retreats.
And you don't need to exercise, just sit.
Now you can go back to yoga.
For your health.
Or meditation.
Right,
exactly. Exactly.
For your good posture, for your good health.
Right.
Yeah.
With attachment?
Yes,
it doesn't matter. Panya can understand attachment. Otherwise, you are afraid of not having right understanding.
Would you like to comment?
We'd like to hear.
I think if you go play tennis or you do yoga or whatever you do in your daily life, that's not wrong practice. It's wrong understanding that is the problem. So you don't have to give up that practice.
The reason I'm thinking about practice some yoga, but with wrong motivation, I want to lose weight. Because when I practice yoga,
that's not wrong. That's correct.
From the yoga point.
Right.
It doesn't matter to me.
It's better motivation than doing yoga to become enlightened.
Right.
Yeah. You can do the yoga and just forget about reading Patanjali sutras.
Right. It's not easy to just. Yeah, it's easier, much easier now, because Abhidhamma, the reading is really amazing. So.
So you're not going to start reading Abhidhamma before doing yoga.
No. But it's interesting for me, when I practice yoga, the appetites become very, very light and small. The food, the appetite for food become very light and very, very simple. I can only drink water. I cannot drink any other thing. And the egg smell, stinky.
It doesn't matter. Whatever happened doesn't matter at all.
Right.
So that's why it will help you lose weight too.
Yes.
If you eat less, and so that's why it's a good kind of exercise in the morning, and because keep you fit and reduce the appetite. It's okay. Of course there's attachment, but it's just daily life, ordinary attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be understanding any time at all.
Right.
No limit. Right. Otherwise one's always limiting the time and occasion and not really understanding what it means by developing understanding in daily life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What makes one be afraid of doing such and such?
Moha. Ignorance.
More attachment to self.
Wrong understanding.
I think people go to the gym, right, and they don't feel, I'm doing something special, I'm just losing weight. Then you go practice yoga, and you're really accomplishing the same thing, and oh, I'm practicing yoga, I am special, you see.
And I have to be vegetarian.
And I have to be vegetarian, and so forth. So for a Westerner, I think that's a trap, whereas maybe if you lived in India or somewhere, not so much. It depends, but it's, if you think of going to the gym, the yogic gym, same.
Well, going to the kitchen.
Exercise.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't mind repeating what they're asking us to repeat, say Om or whatever, I don't know what. You can do that just because everyone else is doing it.
I think there are many, many subtle traps out there, and they're not easy to see. I don't think they're easy to see, you know, especially when everyone else seems to be doing it. You know, everyone's going along and doing yoga, or and that's quite popular now. These different places where you go, and people are always kind of searching in that broader sense of the word, but. That's why the Buddha's teachings are so unique. The Dhamma, well, that's even a trap too, because people think, you know, when they see perhaps a monk or something, he must know the Buddha's teachings. But that may not be so either. So it's not easy, you know. And then to be fortunate enough to hear the Dhamma, the Sad Dhamma, which is different. The Sad Dhamma is the real, you could say the real Dhamma. It's not, then to begin development, it's always like subtle, and great patience and consideration and hearing and rehearing and reconsidering. It's not easy, I don't think. You know, when you think of the conditions that come together, the Buddha likened it to that simile of the turtle, you know, coming up to be born as a human being, and then What are the chances of a blind turtle coming up to the top? And the Buddha likened that to be born a human being. What are the chances of being born a human being? The Buddha likened it to the blind turtle. To hearing the Dhamma, the Buddha likened to the blind turtle. So rare. So it's not easy.
And what one learns is that the traps are not out there at all. The traps are purely inside, or purely in one's understanding, in the citta now. And then that's when there can be the learning to live alone, no matter where or what, no matter what the outer appearance. We have no idea when we see everyone doing their yoga pose what kind of thinking there is at any moment. You were talking a bit earlier about, or mentioning about, nimitta. And I have a question. We say that it's always nimitta because what is seen, for example, arises and falls away so fast. So it's nimitta which is experienced. But what about during the sense door process itself and the first mind door process, but during the sense door process itself, what is actually seen is the reality, and the other cheetahs in that process experience the reality. So when it's said
the
that
the nimitta of reality,
even in that eye-door process, even
right now.
Yeah, but during the eye-door process, because the visible object has not fallen away yet.
That is paramatta.
That is paramatta.
Not nimitta.
Not nimitta. So the other cheetahs in that eye-door process experience the reality, not the nimitta. So
but
when
now,
but now, now it's nimitta for sure. So during the sense-door processes, if there is understanding, and I'm not talking about now, it is the reality. And in the first mind-door process, it's a characteristic of the reality, but already nimitta of reality then.
Is nimitta, you mean to say is when there's understanding of visible object, it's understanding, the nimitta is the object.
Nimitta of visible object.
Because it's not. one visible object, it's not the actual reality, it's the sign of visible object after countless moments of experience of visible object.
Through the mind or only? Nimitta is only through the mind or? Nimitta?
Yes, because through the sense door, it is the reality. And through the mind door, even the first mind door process, when it's the reality, it's always nimitta.
Because we talk about one moment that Buddha has experienced, but what about now? It's not one at all. That's why they're all nimitta. Rupa nimitta, Vedana nimitta, Sanya nimitta, Sankhara nimitta, and Vinyana nimitta as well.
To say the Buddha has experience or he understood? He
directly
understood, not experience, because the process would be the same for anyone.
Directly
first,
experience
the sense
whatever.
Door would be sense door, whereas mind door will always be nimitta. But his wisdom was so great that he understood.
Directly experience any reality,
how?
Any time, whatever he put it, even in the past or the future, any time, whatever, whatever his
one moment
is mine.
You mean yesterday's visible object he can experience directly?
Directly, whatever he put his mind to.
As nimitta, because it's gone, but exactly the same.
Yeah, so as Ajahn was saying before, nimitta doesn't mean concept, because...
No, we're talking about this fire circle.
Yeah, but to be shaped.
How can we recall to be experienced?
Ajahn, could the Buddha understand in that sense door process? Could wisdom understand at that particular time?
Because the Vipassana Jnana experienced both nama and rupa.
Perhaps
in different doors.
No, I want. Would I perhaps want some clarification on in that sense door process? When it's not nimitta, when it's visual, when it is the visual object,
but
could that be known by the Buddha, for example?
It does mean that anyone can understand just one citta or one cetasika only. One can understand the nimitta of one characteristic.
Yeah, I can follow that, I think. But in that sense door process, could wisdom arise in that sense door process for the Buddha? And know that not as a meter, but as reality.
Repeat it again.
Well, in that sense door process, it's not the meter. So,
what do you mean by that?
Well, it's not the image of what is real. It is
but
real.
Who can tell the difference between one moment to the sense door and the mind door?
I thought the Buddha would be able to.
Yes.
Yes.
And the answer is that Panya can arise in the sense door process with the kusala cittas, just like ditti can arise.
What he taught us is like few leaves in his hand.
Yeah.
Can the Buddha directly experience santirana citta?
Any reality, that would be as that would be nimitta, dhamma nimitta, sankara nimitta, and in the past it's the same because of the jhana ability. Then not just the Buddha, but also the other arahats who became enlightened with jhana as base, as object, they could directly experience realities in the past, many lives back or whatever, but not with the same skill as the Buddha, but then as sankhara nimitta, directly experiencing the reality.
So, Ajahn, a reality that has completely fallen away can be directly understood?
Nimitta.
Like yesterday's visible object?
But it's not as the visible object which is seen yesterday.
So what is it?
Nimitta.
Nimitta.
Memory. Memory.
Yeah. So memory.
Remembers.
Like but memory is not the same as nimitta, as in the...
All are nimittas, because no one can really pinpoint just one citta, which arises and falls away. Even in Vipassana Jnana, it's called sankhara nimitta, it's experience. Just one succeeds one another. Otherwise, he's not the Buddha.
How a Buddha could directly know or understand the citta of others or the anusya of other beings. So it's from nimitta of reality. Yep. Understood what the citta is, what lobha or dosa is arising, what tendency has been eradicated. Directly understanding that. The nature, the nimitta of that reality.
So as soon as the object enters the sensorial process, it becomes a nimitta of the visible object. And after enters the sensorial process, it becomes a nimitta.
Well,
it
doesn't become.
Not becomes. That's the wrong... But it's the nimitta. It's not physical.
After the object falls away.
Wait, but
it's immediate. The nimitta is like the after image of the object.
Yeah. I don't mean it comes, it goes through.
Just when you were saying, Sukhin, before, in the Vinaya, there are examples of the monks and bhikkhu who weren't sure if they'd committed certain types of offences, because they had a lot of doubts, and so they went to see the Buddha. Was that offence committed? And so he was able to turn his mind to if they were parajika or not, you know, just by a moment, a few moments, or probably thousands of moments.
I thought was similar to if you were to confess to me that this is something you did yesterday, then according to my level of understanding, I may give a judgment. I thought it was similar to that. It's just that Buddha, in the case of the Buddha, his wisdom was so great that
he could know the
not just kind of idle speculating, like but directly knowing the accumulations.
So even when we pay attention to the palm, after a few seconds, you can feel the subtle vibration on the palm, for example. So now that experience is not directly on the reality, but on the meter.
Sorry, what vibration are you talking about?
You can feel the vibration in the palm, right? So it's not vibration, it's a wind element, right? You can feel. You can feel the palm if you pay attention to it for a few seconds. Or sometimes when you feel vibration. Anyway, when you feel vibration on the... Yeah, any.
I mean, I can just say, just feel your ear. I mean, that may be a condition for you to pay attention. You're remembering your own ear and something, and and start imagining things, right? Because when you talk about the palm, it's already a concept. It's already an idea.
I'm talking about a vibration in the palm. That when you can feel a wind element.
People who have their arms cut off, they can still feel their hands, right? And that's because of what?
Is this a natural thing or you developed skill?
A natural thing. Just sometimes when you... I use palm. Palm is just...
Vibrating.
Reference. The key is you feel the characteristic of the wind element, right? You can feel the vibration.
What appears now?
Thinking.
And what? What else?
And doubt.
I'm talking about palm.
That's a concept.
And what else? When you talk about wind and so on, what appears right then?
What appears?
At the moment when you're talking about wind element.
That's thinking, right?
No movement at all? Motion?
Yeah, there is some motion, right.
We don't have to name it.
Right.
But our reality is there at that moment.
Right. That so the question initially was, is that experience of nimitta our reality?
No question, no name. Only the real one.
Also, it could be both.
The characteristic of reality appear. It doesn't mean that what is it? How do I call it? But to understand it as nothing but that characteristic, as no self, no param.
I think to answer your question, I think it could be anything. You particularly brought out Trump, but why not seeing, hearing right now? So the question is whether that experience of seeing now, hearing now is experience of direct the reality or the nimitta. It's always the minimitta.
Okay. For example, if someone has a fire close to me and I just shy away, right? So that's experience of the fire. Is that experience of reality or experience of nimitta? It should be reality, right?
It's always the reality that's experienced, in the sense that if we talk about body sense, it experiences heat or temperature. So it doesn't experience nimitta of heat or temperature. But we're talking about possible moments of understanding that follow the moment of sensed or experience. So if you're asking about if there's understanding,
That's nimitta.
But the actual experience is always like seeing always experiences visible object. It doesn't experience nimitta of visible object.
After many bhavanga-cittas in between, so not immediately after because of the bhavanga-citta.
I understand what you say. I understand because for so long time you were attentive to vibration and kind of meditation that you learned. So I understand that it still comes up. But it's so good if you realize it, why this happens, that it is accumulated, just that it's not self, it's by conditions, that you speak again about vibration or what was practiced for so long time that is strong, so it still comes up.
And keep coming up. And the point of the Dhamma,
the vibration or the attending to, like none of us would attend to vibrations, and so this is a kind of conditioned by the wrong practice.
So it's similar to anyone else, the development of understanding in from one aspect is to understand the reality of what we used to take for this and that, like what we used to take for breathing. We come after hearing the Dhamma, we come to understand what we used to take for breathing is something, or what we used to take for my seeing is something. Same with what you take for vibration, what is it? So when you hear the Dhamma, you know that it's only one reality at a time. The idea of vibration is just the idea of a whole. But in fact, in the reality is one experience to one of the doorways, sense doorways at a time. And we continue to hear about these. So what is seeing through the body sense, we learn there are three rupas, so we have to understand them one at a time. So not we're not there to understand vibration as vibration, but to understand what the reality is that gives the idea of experiencing vibration.
Question from Anne Marshall via Dhamma Home. She says, accumulated tendency to practice, even if not doing something like sitting, concentrating, can find wrong practice in studying the Dhamma. Trying, looking for a particular object, thinking one can do something to hasten the development of understanding, ever more subtle. So it's a comment on what we've just been discussing.
It's good that you realize it, to realize it, that it is conditioned, what you think now about vibration. Of course, yeah, it's natural.
There is still that deep-rooted tendency to attend to something, and this is wrong practice, conditioned by past or present wrong view.
To what Anne just said and what John said earlier about wrong practice coming in many different, more subtle forms. This includes, like, for example, now, was that visible object? Or that's sound, that's hearing, trying to label, you know, all the time. You know, that's also a form of wrong practice.
Noting, sometimes they call it. Trying to catch reality.
Jeez,
I've heard people refer to it as noting. Yeah, in the especially within the Burmese tradition, someone's called noting.
It's touted as non-selective practice, just noting whatever comes up. So it's not selecting an object, they say, but still, yeah, because it's actually trying to catch, in some sense, different objects. And as we commented earlier, whatever it was has fallen away already anyway.
Noting the, what one is thinking about instead of actually understanding anything about what appears.
So, Ajahn, it would seem that abandoning the idea of self must include understanding that the reality now has already fallen away.
But to understand that, it is the moment of being aware of that which is real. And later on, there can be more development of understanding of the arising and falling of that one. Because what appears now is present, and at the moment of realizing the falling away, no one there, and the arising of the next one, nimitta.
We were just saying that when it's visible object in the eye-door process, it's reality, and in the subsequent mind-door process, it's nimitta of the reality. And we're also saying that it's not, unless it's the Buddha, in the Buddha's case, it's not just one visible object, but many, many experiences when it is many, many moments of experience of visible object when it's sankhara nimitta, but in that subsequent mind or process when it is the exact replica or exact copy of the visible object that's fallen away, it's just one visible object. It's not many processes.
Many now.
But when we're talking about the many now, because it's not that very refined direct understanding in that subsequent mind or process. And
even mind or process, but everything appears as nimitta.
But it has to be nimitta. But when it is that first mind or process, it's not the nimitta formed by many, many experiences of many different visible objects, but it's because it's that exact same visible object that has just fallen away.
That's the way it is, but not the way it appears. That's because the way it appears is a succession of many, many seeing and that which is seen.
Wouldn't that be afterwards? Because in that very first mind or process, when it's the exact copy of the reality, why would it be the succession rather
because
than
just
one?
Because of the rapidity of the succession.
Because of being so many experiences of visible object. So it's still the nimitta of the succession of visible object.
That's why at moment of realization of the Nirodha or Nibbana, it's only reality which has no nimitta.
Yes, Nibbana. And when we were talking about the arising and falling away of reality and how it's still nimitta, so it's still the nimitta of the succession of many
which appears realities, as one.
Which appears as one.
Characteristic.
But actually, because there have been many.
So we live in the world of nimitta.
The world of nimitta as experienced by lopa and moha.
And also panya.
And when we were talking about light as object of calm, and you explained because its attachment to shape and form, so it must be light. And we're saying it's not sankhara nimitta, its concept is a nimitta of the concept of what is visible. Why is it nimitta of the concept of light rather than sankhara nimitta?
The same. Sankhara nimitta is the light at that moment, at the beginning, until the development of samatha grows enough to be the upajara, and then the mark or the nimitta of light.
But I thought that you understood it in relation to my question about light being a condition, and your answer was that we're talking about light as condition for being able to mark the details. So in this case, when it's light as object of samatha, I think it's similar. It's not just the nimitta of visible object, but light as in many moments of visible object with light to recognize something. You know, like
concept
of light, right? So, but even when we're talking about light being a condition, we're talking about light as in able to recognize not visible object, but more than just that, being able to recognize this as a cup and that as a table.
It's light. It's the concept of light appearing to the mind door,
yes.
Only.
And light would always, what I gather is that light would always be a concept.
Well, not in the beginning. In the beginning, the visible object with light as an aspect is the reality, it's the sankhara nimitta. But when there is thinking about it, and when, as Ajahn just said, when it's upajara and it's the mark, which is the condition for highly developed samadhi at that moment, it's like when we talk about earth kasina or color kasina,
right.
Because it's the object that usually there is a lot of attachment to, but there's the understanding. It's just light. It's not of any importance what is seen at all.
Right, but as in the case of kasina, it's concept from the beginning, isn't it?
Before there can be, there has to be color, there has to be visible object before there can be thinking about color, or before there can be kasina or anything else. Without visible object, there would never be any color kasina. Without patavi dhatu, there would never be any earth kasina.
Right, but the thing is that samatha does not understand patavi.
No.
They understand the concept of patavi, so it's always concept from the beginning.
It's just the same. But the point is that it is because there is a reality that there is.
That's to our understanding, but not to the understanding of someone who develops samatha.
So that's why it's always nimitta. Nimitta of a. It's always a concept, except
concept.
In a couple of
right,
cases.
Right. In the case of kasina, it's nimitta of what is appearing through the eye door. In the case of reflecting on light, it's not an emitter of anything that's currently being experienced through the sense door. Right.
Well, Ajahn mentioned shape and paying attention to shape and form is still further after seeing. There is nimitta of seeing, and then there is paying attention to shape and form, which is more than concept. Is because it's with kilesa, and it's a further stage.
And I would say, all without, if there's at that moment understanding at the level of samatha, even was shape and form, there can be taking the concept of light as object, because there is light. Shape and form, there won't be shape and form without light. So if there's panya that understands in between the concept of light, that could possibly take the concept of light. Now, like Patvi Dhatu, anyone can understand Patvi Dhatu. I mean, that panya can arise anytime to see how that conditions come.
Yeah, that's the development of samatha you're talking about.
Yeah, samatha.
Yeah, in that case, no shape and form.
No shape and form.
But in between, concept.
In between thinking, there can be understanding, because there is the concept of light also. Yeah. There is light, so there can be understanding at that moment. You know, similar to understanding visible object, but at the level of samatha.
It works in just the same way as Patavi or any other.
Yeah, yes, same.
Just exactly the same process.
So now it's the nimitta of reality, not the nimitta of samatha bhavana.
But what I'm trying to say is that someone during the Buddha's time who has developed samatha, for them, taking understanding at the level of samatha can arise in daily life, but only understanding of samatha. To understand, for example, right now, that how light can condition calm, isn't it?
Talking about now, it's not samatha development, but the object is light, right? And there's no understanding of light as just a reality. There is the idea of people and thing, right? But when there is the understanding of vipassana or the development of insight, it's just a reality which can be seen, while the other realities cannot be seen at all. And by way of samatha practice, it's not by way of vipassana, because one knows that one clings to shape and form. But without shape and form, there will be less clinging to things and people or whatever it is. That's why the person who sees the danger of attachment to shape and form as being, as much as they can know, is that thinking all the time about light. That's why there is the dis of light. This of whatever Patavi or whatever is there. Only that. So that the mind will just think about that instead of thinking about shape and form. But the object is exactly the same in the beginning, but later on through mind only that the nimitta of light appear as object of
that's
calmness.
So it's highly developed stage of samatha bhavana.
So there can be the experience of light without understanding, no matter what level. And doubt is there, which means that there is no understanding at all.
Wise reflection on how everything we find important just depends on light, and if there's no light, no shape, no form, no people, no tasty things to eat, no drinks or no names at all, and can be condition of calm even now, but we don't call it samatha bhavana, but it's the same way of considering and understanding to condition calm at this moment. Nothing at all to do with focusing on like or having special light experience.
Like you said, it's the same as patvidhatu or vayo. Or,
so if one understands one, like wise reflection on earth and everything depending on patvi, and without it, no house, no belongings, so nothing that belongs to one can condition calm now. So it's just the same.
And the person who has developed great understanding of samatha, no matter whether it's now or then, there can be a moment of taking that object as nimitta. Exactly the same as vipassana. Any time, any reality, when panya develops, it can understand that very moment.
As nimitta.
As no self.
Stand you then, Ajahna. In jhana, there's this repeated devotion, if you like, to that kasina, like whatever it be, say like bhartui. And they that particular person, how long, well, I suppose it's going to depend on their accumulations, but outside of the Buddha's teachings, how long would they be doing that? You know, like you're saying, after a while, that just becomes natural to them.
Because of experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Enough to condition that moment.
After staying in the forest for a long, long time.
I was just recently reading the commentary to the Dhammapada, and a word that's used there is I should note, because it uses for a definition of pariyatti these asajjhaya and asajjha, which means continual. It defines pariyatti as asajjhayana, the continual repetition or the repeated bringing to mind of the teachings and of the reality. And if there's not that,
just like now.
Yeah, just like now.
Yeah.
Which
what
we forget
we heard
about.
And we forgot.
I know we forget.
And when will it be that moment, see?
What I was interested in was the word sanjayana, sanjaya, or sanjayati, which is the verb to remember or to recite. It's very similar to it's exact same root as the Pali word jhana, which means got in the Pali samjhayana, which is with and burning, which is the same word, and it's translated as repeating or reciting. And then of course the root of that, of the word jhana, of course means to burn or to. I was just thinking about what you were saying before, Ajahn, about with development of jhana there is the continual bringing to mind of the object, a continual repeating, if you would like, so that
it's burning. It's burning at that moment too.
Sorry,
while thinking or concentrating on one object, it is burning.
It is what? Sorry,
burning.
Burning. Oh, burning. Yes, of course. Yeah, burning. Yeah, and also
kilesa.
So, yeah, that's
even the considering is a kind of.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I was just curious about. In that verse there, it talks about
that's how it's translated as repeating or rehearsing. Yeah, repeating or reciting, but that's very similar to, yes, it's related to that word to burn. There is a burning, which is the burning, as I believe you're referring to the anino as the burning of the kilesa at the level of samatha. But also it can be referred to with vipassana or with development of panya, the burning in a sense, momentarily, if you will.
Depending
so
on
what?
Ignorance,
burning
attachment.
Okay. But in the case of jhana, it's not burning ignorance.
It's like we were talking about abandoning. It's same, different kinds of abandoning. And in the development of samatha and jhana, it's temporarily, it's suppressing, it's burning at that that kind.
That's having effect on something else, you know.
It's having effect on the kilesa at that moment, at
but
the moment
not,
of jhana.
Apparently,
it's,
when
it's,
when
it has,
it's just suppressing.
Yes,
so that suppressing is like burning, you're
it's
saying.
It's burning.
By getting less, right? Getting less, the force becomes smaller, is it? Or just the burning does not really imply the smaller force, just suppressed.
Sorry. I'm not sorry, Vince. I didn't quite understand. You referring at the level, was that, were you talking about samatha or we or
there are two kinds of burning. There's the burning in the development of samatha, and jhana is the burning of attachment to sense impressions temporarily. And then there is the burning in the development of insight leading to enlightenment, which is the total eradication. So it is the burning of ignorance and attachment.
So in a sense, in the case of jhana, mundane jhana, for example, it gives, one can get the wrong impression from the term burning. One can get the idea that it means burning up so that they have been dissipated or reduced, but that's not in fact the case. Not in fact the case. That they have been burnt away. Mm. Even, well, even partially or completely. They've just been suppressed. Mm.
Subdued. That seems to fit well with the idea that jhana can lead to rebirth in Brahma realms, because it's still more rebirth because the kilesas have not been burnt. It's just being suppressed. So when rebirth, when in the Brahma realms, it's just being suppressed.
And there are two kinds of jhana, Aramanubanit jhana and Lakhanupanit jhana.
Talk about those, Ajahn.
Aramanupanit jhana is the object of the development of samatha. And Lakhanu, it means Lakhana, characteristic of reality, is vipassana.
also when one's reading about jhana in any of the texts, one has to see what is meant by the context, because often it may be Lakanupanijana rather than Aramanupanijana that is referred, or when the Buddha talked about here the roots and jayati, it often refers to development of both kinds of jhana.
So now we can see why jhana is so often talked about. It's because it is quite significant to have lakana as object, Lakanupanijana. It's a strong, high level of panya.
This is the path of Lakanupanijana, has to begin now, leading to insight and leading to enlightenment. Mm. So any kind of Lokutra cittas are jhana cittas.
Not every mention of jhana carries both those meanings. So a lot of the references to jhana are just to the mundane jhana. A lot of the references to jhana in the text are to mundane jhana. Particularly so in the Visuddhimagga section on samadhi, because it begins that section by saying that the concentration that is associated with the path is dealt with in the section under panya.
Okay, I would never read the Visuddhimagga. I've never read the Visuddhimagga, but could we say that the reason for mentioning the mundane jhana in the Visuddhimagga is to show all levels of kusla, or to show the distinction between the path and not the path?
Both.
I think also the other day, Ajahn, when we were talking about sila and sila visuddhi, and we were saying, well, because it's the Visuddhimagga, then when it's talking about sila, it is about the development of sila visuddhi. And can one say that in the middle section, because it is talking about, because it is the Visuddhimagga and it's talking about samatha and jhana, it is talking about citta visuddhi and the developments of all kinds of samadhi in depending on accumulations and different daily life, which have to be understood through the development of satipatthana depending on those accumulations. So it is the development of citta visuddhi.
Same purpose and as the Buddha did when he was talking. The point is to understand jhana as just dhamma.
Another dhamma.
Right.
And because many people who listen, this is daily life for them. Saying that without sila visuddhi, there cannot be citta visuddhi. And when we're talking about citta visuddhi and it's referring to samadhi, it depends on the accumulations in any level. But can you say a little more about, so we know in the development of sila visuddhi, we're talking about the development of kusala and understanding of different realities, and between sila visuddhi and ditti visuddhi, which is direct understanding of realities and namarupa paricheda jnana, when it is citta visuddhi, what exactly is meant?
The ekakata cetasikas, which arise with the sila visuddhi.
So why is it particularly a
and
stage?
In some places they just talk about upajara samadhi, and apana samadhi. Because when it mentioned the word samadhi, it includes every level.
So when we say there cannot be citta visuddhi without sila visuddhi, it means there cannot be understanding of any ekagata cetasika, any samadhi, without the development of understanding of realities.
Because and actually, what is sila?
In this context, kusala mm-hmm. with understanding. Yeah. And in this context, we're talking about concentration with understanding. Mm-hmm. And then when it's talking about Ditti Visuddhi, understanding of any reality, yeah, stage of insight.
The Sila Visuddhi and Samadhi Visuddhi will lead to Ditti Visuddhi, Vipassana Jnana.
And I didn't get that point quite, the last point, Vipassana Jnana. Yeah?
Because she said Sila Visuddhi and Citta Visuddhi will lead to Ditti Visuddhi, Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana. So Sila Visuddhi, it's the development of Satipatthana, actually, because it's development of understanding, development of kusala with understanding of realities. Otherwise, it's not Visuddhi.
Visuddhi.
So really, it's we can say in brief, actually, it's the development of Satipatthana leading to Vipassana Jnana, to higher insight. Understanding of ekagata cetasika, of concentration of any level or any degree, no matter it's upachara or apana, for those who have developed samatha or any concentration.
But in the context of saying that sila visuddhi leads to citta visuddhi, which then leads to ditti visuddhi, what is the citta visuddhi? That's not jhana. That's related to satipatthana. So what is it?
It means that no need to develop extra samadhi, because samadhi is there.
It means whatever samadhi there is too, by accumulations or habit, it can be understood. It's another dharma that's fallen away at any moment. So one could say maybe it's just understanding its ordinary reality, no matter what degree or level. But why is it particularly samadhi that is...
Because you no need to develop
it. Right. Okay. And no, if there's been no understanding already at Sila Visuddhi, if there's been no understanding of kusala at that level of, but by developing different understanding of realities, that knowledge that no need to develop special samadhi couldn't be known.
But I heard you say, so there is no need to develop samatha
in order to develop right understanding.
Oh, no, of course not. Yeah.
Because the visuddhi that accompanies right understanding is the path, whereas the concentration that arises with samatha is not the path.
Can one say, unless that is very firm and clear, there cannot be Vipassana Jnana, like we know that from the, if we look at the Brahma Jala Sutta and most of the kinds of wrong view or following the wrong path, many of them relate to the attaining of samadhi and taking that for being the path. So unless there's clear understanding that there's no need to develop any special samadhi, that any realities can be understood, there cannot be the higher understanding of Vipassana Jnana.
And also there's this difference between Sila Visuddhi achieved at Sotapanna and Chitta Visuddhi achieved at Anagami. And so maybe that's also a reference to what needs to be developed, because at some stage there's no more attachment to sense objects. Because that's the concern of many people, attachment to sense objects. So to point out that at the moment of development of right understanding, this concentration is already being there and developed.
But anyway,
and also there's the idea of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. So this is what's been, you know, going around. So that's another point to show the difference. No, but it's something that people talk about and see importance, because Sila is important, all kinds of Kusala is important, and then, of course, the aim is Panya. So put all that in the context of development, you know, in relation to the development of the path, to show that the sila that you want to attain is only through the development of understanding, and the concentration that is relevant is this kind of concentration, not that. And the goal is with eradication of wrong view.
Otherwise it cannot be
Adi Sila, Adi Chitta, Adi Panya. Yeah.
I was thinking of that, you know, that the idea of sila bhattu paramasa, you know, so that people can differentiate clearly the difference between what's skillful behaviour and what is not, too, you know, because we know that sila bhattu paramasa is eradicated by sotapanna. Yeah, the wrong sila.
So, Chan, there's sila bhatta paramasa. Is there anything else?
Anything which is strong path. Anything which is not right path is sila bhatta paramasa.
So, even concentration. Even the practice of concentration.
Mm-hmm. If it's the development of samatha with no wrong understanding, then it's not sila bhatta paramasa. I think you mean just when there is the wrong practice.
But there's still wrong understanding, wrong view.
If it hasn't been mm-hmm. different moments.
And what eradicates sila paramasa?
Sotapatimaka.
So it includes any wrong practice, wrong understanding, which is not a path, is sila bhatta paramasa.
But we know that there are Aryans who continue to experience jhana, but without wrong understanding. So when it is the jhana itself, how can that be wrong?
They don't
practice?
Have to try to have it.
They don't try,
mm-hmm. but by accumulation.
By accumulations.
Yeah.
No, Chan was saying, so any practice which is not leading to eradication is wrong practice. And that this wrong practice is eradicated at Sotapatimagga. So I was thinking about Aryans who were still experiencing jhana by accumulations. That would not count as wrong practice.
Because it's not practice at all. You said before
it's
that those
practice.
Who practice jhana, but it's not practicing. Well, there is just
I would leave out the word practice. Who? So it's not bhavana. Even for an Aryan who experienced jhana, is there development of jhana For Aryan who experiences jhana,
no more silapatta pramasa.
But is there a development of jhana? Is the jhana?
It depends on conditions.
Like we said yesterday, the kriya citta is still accumulating.
That's
so,
arahat.
Sorry.
That's arahat. We're talking about.
Even the arahats or anyone or anagamis or sotapannas, there's still the accumulation of all kinds of kusala.
Right.
Naturally, like if there are conditions for jhanas, cittas to arise, then that kusala accumulates.
No, you were distinguishing between the word...
But no
the idea of practicing.
No, trying to have anything. No wrong idea that I can have or I can do or I can practice.
Okay.
So they're not practicing.
Okay. In that sense, in that meaning of the word. Not the meaning as in development. Yeah.
Concentrate on breath. It says silapatta pramasa.
Depends. It's development of samatha is not...
Because vipassana doesn't select any object.
No.
That's why only sotapattimagga can eradicate wrong understanding and silapatta pramasa.
And for the Buddha, conditions for many, many jhana cittas to arise repeatedly throughout the day... Very natural. So it just depends on accumulation.
Even in the development of samatha, it's not a matter of concentrating on. It's a matter of reflecting on. And it's the right reflection that constitutes the development, not the concentration per se.
Right, but what's to stop the conditions for the reflection turning to taking one object repeatedly at a time, that can happen, right? So we're not talking about necessarily talking about someone making a decision to concentrate, but it's just by conditions that the concentration happens out of habit.
Well, it happens as a result of the development of samatha. It's not a means of the development of samatha.
Even the one who develops samatha without any understanding of reality is still not by anyone practicing or doing anything. It's still only through the development of understanding and calm.
So is that wrong practice?
Not wrong practice at all, otherwise it's not samatha bhavana. It cannot be wrong. At those moments.
So even before sotapattimagga, samatha bhavana not necessarily is wrong practice.
Not only at moments when there is wrong understanding, but at moments when there are moments of calm, kusala calm.
Right.
At those moments of bhavana, no wrong practice at those moments.
It's not wrong according to samatha practice. But it's wrong. Silapatta pramasa.
So the point is that it becomes silapatta pramasa. It is silapatta pramasa only when there is wrong understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the development of metta or development of generosity. That when there is real generosity, it's not silapatta pramasa. But if one when there's the idea of giving and giving and making more and more donations to the temple as a practice, then it's silapatta pramasa.
Even trying to have develop the barmi, that's also wrong practice.
But abandoning it was very helpful that you mentioned this morning.
Little by little.
Yeah.
And any kind of good deeds, it's moment of abandoning.
Any
kind of good deeds.
Yeah.
It's the moment of error.
Abandoning.
Yeah.
Akusala.
And nekama.
Nekama.
It's time to give away, see?
Yes.
Otherwise, the idea of self cannot give away anything.
Just
wanting for oneself all the time.
Yeah.
Giving away the idea of self.
Yes.
Unknowingly, just little by little.
So are we talking about the sub-barmies?
Yeah. because one cannot condition right understanding to arise as much as one would like it to be. So it needs all kinds of kusala to be, to be parami, conditions for giving away and renunciation and abandoning.
Nekama is renunciation?
Mm-hmm. Renounce from akusala.
So at any moment of kusala, it is nekama, it is renunciation. Mm-hmm. But unless there's any understanding of reality, it's not nekama parami.
Because I think it's well misused. You know, people think they have to renounce the sensuous life and...
But it's not part of me without right understanding.
Right. Mm.
See, the problem with such ideas is the wrong understanding.
That thinks that way. So that itself is an obstruction. I mean, we're not saying kusala is not of value. Kusala is of value. But to think, and as earlier we were talking about sila bhatta paramasa, to take kusala as being... an important practice in terms of developing the path, that is wrong.
Yeah, but Ajahn was saying that at the beginning, any kind of kusala, it's useful for the development.
It's useful in and of itself. It's useful, but not with the idea of doing it for the case. To say that dana is useful, because without dana, giving away things, they cannot be giving away the idea of self, is different from saying that do dana so that there can be understanding. Or
on the other end, when there is little, very very little panya, otherwise there would be no kusala at all.
Right. So it natural.
Yeah.
Right, natural. Kusala is there, should to be appreciated. What's not to be appreciated is the idea that doing kusala leads to panya. Yeah.
So life is useless. When there's no kusala, it's gone each moment with no understanding.
And on another level, it's also useless to have kusala without panya, because it still conditions rebirth.
But it can be conditioned, unless there must be a kusala instead.
It can be a condition only if there is a right understanding. Means different moments.
So there is kusala, which is not panya yet, parami yet, but the kusala, which is parami with panya.
Right. Because without panya, the kusala is also liable to be taken for
better
self.
Better than akusala.
But it's also liable to be taken for self. At that moment,
that's why kusala with right understanding is better than kusala without right understanding.
And that's why also, in one sense, it is the wrong path too, if it's development of kusala and development of samatha, even to jhana, if there's no understanding of realities. Actually, it's said to be a wrong path.
It brings about result as becoming arupa jhana, but still never get away from samsara.
Whether or not the jhana is taken for self or not, but it seems that in the development of samatha leading to jhana, it's likely to happen, given that it leads to certain results, and that result is liable to be taken for the goal.
It always is like the yoga or anything else. It all comes back to the accumulation of right understanding. If there's right understanding, no matter it's
jhana or anything else, then no misunderstanding. So it depends on the understanding rather than the kind of cheetahs or the situation.
And even the development of insight can be taken for something else.
At the moment of insight?
Well, there can be mistaking, I forget the name, but the insight can be, for the reason I think that you mentioned, that some development and possibly attainment can be taken for having reached the path, for having reached the goal, and that sort of thing. What do they call the...
I'm thinking also about why in the Brahmacharya, as I've heard, so many of the wrong paths have to do with practice, so particular practices.
Not
because, is it because
not to do with practices, but to do with wrong understanding, so wrong understanding of what the path is.
Right, and we're talking about people, experiences of people in different levels of attainment of jhanas, which are taken for as being the path.
Being the path and being the goal.
No, because in normal lopa daily life, ordinary lopa, nobody's going to take that for the path, right? But once it becomes some form of practice, then it's very liable to be taken for being right.
Why do you keep calling it the development of samatha, some kind of practice? Because development of samatha is not a practice.
Bhavana, you want to call that?
Bhavana is not practice. It's the development of understanding and calm, if it's samatha. It's not practice.
Okay.
So ideas of wrong understanding and wrong practice are not at the moments of calm, but at other moments when it's mistakenly understood.
And jhana development can be mistaken for being the path?
Can be mistaken, so that when there's wrong understanding and wrong mistaking and silabhata paramasa, then it's all wrong, but not the actual moments of jhana.
And that can be a motivation to continue the samatha practice, bhavana, that can be a motivation?
Can we say that samatha practice is wrong understanding, but samatha bhavana is the development of calmness? Because today is the meditation-centered practice.
Right, that's wrong practice. That's mm-hmm. not samatha bhavana. What I'm saying is that samatha bhavana, as in the Brahmacharya Sutta states, is considered wrong path.
According to wrong understanding.
Right. So what I'm saying is that even though the samatha itself is not wrong, as in wrong practice, it is liable to be taken as the path.
Because of misunderstanding.
Because of misunderstanding.
You then went on to say that because of misunderstanding, then they will practice samatha bhavana more, but no one practices samatha bhavana. There is no practice of samatha bhavana.
You mean to say?
So no one can have samatha bhavana developing or arising by will or wish or intention or trying.
Like now, no one can have seeing arise.
Exactly. So there's no practice of samatha bhavana. So when there are moments of wrong understanding and wrong practice, it's not the development of samatha. That's why Ajahn said it's, you've got samatha practice in inverted commas, but it's not samatha bhavana. So no one, because of wrong understanding, can develop samatha. So different moments, different ideas. Samatha is not, it's not any development by any wrong idea of self. But there can be wrong idea of self at other moments, but not at the moments of bhavana.
I'd like to clarify something here, Sarah.
You're saying, you seem to be saying it's wrong to use the word practice.
No.
When practice is used, it indicates the wrong understanding of self, who can do something, and actually in reality no one can do anything. Mm-hmm. So when there is the attempting to do something or trying to do something, like trying to have calm or trying to understand, it is wrong practice, like in the meditation centers. Mm-hmm. So that is not Samatha Bhavana. Mm-hmm.
That's understood. I wonder if we're being overly precious with the use of the word practice. Ultimately, it comes from the Greek word praxi. I've spent quite a bit of time on this, which means to do, like having a practice, like perhaps a deep practice or anything. And I wonder sometimes if there, ultimately it comes down to the understanding.
Also, Sarah is trying to point out to me that someone who develops jhana does not have the idea of practicing jhana.
No.
It comes to him naturally by conditions, and he is not saying that I want to practice. He cannot have jhana by wanting to have jhana.
In spite of moments of wrong view that can arise at different moments, like moments of wrong view of the idea of self or someone who can do anything, but not because of wrong view. The kusala doesn't develop, samatha doesn't develop. I think we're not precious enough about the use of practice. I think it's really important.
It's not a real correct use of practice, it seems to me. Yeah. It's just an English word to describe something that is done.
Well, it...
Yes.
So the term practice does appear in the teachings, of course, like in the phrase tamanu dhamma paripada.
Well, it can be translated in many different ways. Practice is one of them.
Yes, but I don't think it appears in the context of samatha practice and vipassana practice in the teachings. It means the actual having of understanding when it's used in the teachings. It means the actual arising of insight or understanding when it's used in the teachings.
Kind of a translation for different words. I've seen it used in different contexts, like patipatti is sometimes translated as practice, but we know
in what language?
In English, which
in Thai to practice for patipatti, but actually it does mean practice.
But
In Thai we use the word patibat for the patipatti, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean practice. Patipatti doesn't mean practice, but patibat is practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong understanding of patipatti.
Mm, it's true. So what you seem to be saying here, Ajahn, it comes down to the understanding, not to use. It's not, things don't hinge upon the use of a certain word or not. They hinge upon the understanding, not the use of.
I think the word is also important. For example, if we distinguish between the word practice and development, development can be referred to moments of the actual arising of kusala with panya, right? Whereas practice often is used to refers to doing something regardless of whether at that moment is kusala or akusala, right? With the idea that it's going to lead to kusala or panya.
If somebody has the accumulations for samatha bhavana,
means the development of calmness.
The development of
or
calmness.
Or just to practice with the idea of self.
No, the real development of calmness.
Okay.
Like
mm-hmm.
That is not someone that we would see in the street. It's not like I imagine someone who has a high degree of samatha bhavana.
So what is really samatha bhavana? It can be metta.
It can be metta. It's not okay.
Yeah.
So I okay, because I was thinking maybe it's someone who
maybe
has
to. Maybe you're referring to
even metta can be jhana.
Yes, sorry, yeah. I do have the wrong. Yeah.
Because that high degree of samatha must have a beginning,
yes.
Must have a low degree.
Yes.
So it's not just...
I didn't realise metta came into that as well, so that's...
I mean, Sariputta...
What about reflection
while he was
on
fanning
death?
The Buddha.
Reflection on death.
Sariputta went in and out of jhana while fanning the Buddha, so for someone who's...
In and out of jhana.
Yeah. For someone who's developed already, it can be anywhere, anytime.
But as soon as there's any idea of practice or doing, and that's why, as Sujan said, even in the Thai, it's wrong when people talk about patipatti as practice or doing, because it's not the what patipatti is. And the same with samatha bhavana. If there's any idea of practicing samatha, it's not correct. It's not just a matter of the word or how one understands the word. Actually, why would that one use that word if there isn't some idea of doing something?
Right.
So that's
right.
Why I picked Sukhin up on it. I don't think we're precious enough about it. I think it's really important to pick it up, because that idea of doing something is so prevalent. Like usually, as John said, most Thai people, they talk about patipatti and they have the idea of doing something, following something, practicing. That's why they use that word, their word. So it's just the same in Thai language, same problem.
Is samatha bhavana difficult?
I'd say yes.
Very difficult.
Because ordinary... In daily life, kusala arises, but not with panya.
And why does one develop samatha?
I'd say accumulations. Someone would develop because of accumulations in the past.
Because seeing the danger of lopa.
Mm-hmm. And developing vipassana or right understanding is the develop. Because of seeing the danger of avicca. It's not just wanting to do it.
So in a way, you were right, you wouldn't see him on the road, because if someone who's has such high level of panya to see the danger of lopa, he would probably be living alone in the forest. You know, but we don't know.
So samatha bhavana cannot develop without panya at all.
Well, it's what I'm hearing is that it seems that most kusala cannot develop really without some degree of panya. No. I mean,
develop means with panya.
Cannot.
Develop means must be with
panya. Yeah.
Either samatha
or vipassana
or dana. Dana developed. We don't talk about dana being developed. No, we're talking about dana as bharami. So
just to clarify, we distinguish between accumulate further and develop. So when we use the word development in the teachings, it means that it's with understanding, whereas if it arises without understanding, it accumulates. So there's no obstacle to all kinds of kusala accumulating further.
But you're not excluding development with panya from that accumulates as well.
Oh, yes, that also accumulates.
What about chaganusati? Chaganusati, development of calm, of giving, of generosity.
No, I just said that I don't know
about any development of generosity, but I'm just saying can be development of calm with generosity as the object.
Is it jhana object?
Chaga.
But it's not to the level of jhana. is it?
I think it would be because it needs contemplation or reflection. So I don't think so, but I forget. But also, it doesn't really matter because in the development of samatha, upachara is very close to apana, very close. So it's whereas in the development of vipassana, it's not close like at moments of vipassana jnana, it's upachara samadhi.
And also, it's not important because it's always good to have more kusala. More, why not?
If it depends on reflection, contemplation, then it's not jhana object.
Jhana.
Correct, because if there is not more and more generosity, there cannot be reflection on chaga or the nature of generosity.
And it depends on the motivation of giving away to. When it's dana, real dana, it is chaga.
It seems you have to have a lot to give away before you can reach dana. To be Bill Gates.
How is that chaga spelled?
J is Jaga.
C.
C, yes. C.
So what's Chagaraga? Is there any such thing?
Name of a song. Chandaraga.
I remember seeing the word Chaga.
Jaga. And if one gives away a lot and one thinks about one's giving away a lot, is that samatha bhavana? Not at all.
Usually a lot of attachment. Mm-hmm. But occasionally there can be reflection on giving, and at that moment of giving away, it is calm, the citta is calm, so there can be reflection on it for a moment before there is
just
all
like
that.
Any kusala, seeing any. The value of kusala.
That's why all kinds of bhavana must be with understanding. Mm-hmm. Higher degree.
So generosity can be developed with understanding. One thing I read or heard, maybe you were talking about generosity, and we're talking about giving things away, and you made the comment, can we respect the receiver? Can you talk a little bit more on that? When we're giving something, can we respect the person we're giving to?
When you receive something, you do good because of the other's giving. Because you know or understand the moment when they give is kusala.
Respect for the person to give to, as in giving to what you know he needs, not just giving something away without just because you want to give, because that person will find it useful.
You mean give with respect?
Yes, I probably mean give with respect. Yes, to respect. The receiver.
Better than not respect.
Yes, and also, as Sukhin just said, giving useful things. I mean, I feel like when you give discarded clothes, I don't want to wear this anymore, you give it to someone, that's not really, doesn't seem like a very pure type of giving.
Can we give respectfully?
Yes,
better
anything.
Than just
anything
give.
To anything.
It's mean more kusala, very, very subtle, at moment of giving. And Panya knows that. So Panya will lead to all kinds of kusala, or any kind of deeds.
So, the same value in the object, you give a beggar, and you give robes to an arahat,
definitely you have more respect for the arahat. So that's showing the respect.
And the receiver can receive respectfully too.
Vincent, any paying attention to any object?
So when you were asking the question, the few moments before the question, I was actually there was attention on the symmetricity of the body, right? Or can feel some tension inside, and I would try to lift up the body. I don't know what exactly you were asking now.
Because earlier you were talking about when you pay attention to the vibrations in the hand.
Right.
And when I just looked, you looked like your eyes were closed or something.
Right,
so I'm
right,
just
right.
asking, is there any paying attention? Because as soon as there is the idea of paying attention to something uh-huh. in that way, it's not understanding. It's like an idea of practice or doing something, however subtly, like Anne said, in her comment, even when one's heard quite a lot about understanding about realities, there can still be those more subtle kinds of practice or attending.
Right.
So that's why it was like a reminder.
Yes, thank you. It's mixed. Because it's accumulated, so it happens. So it doesn't mean I try to catch or select the object. But when it automatically direct over there, and then a few moments after, there's a tendency want to continue to have the attention stay there. But at the beginning, it's just naturally go there. But I'm not trying to stop it, right? When it's go there, it's go there.
And compared to, there would be attention to the sound. When Sarah asked you the question, the sound, thinking about Sarah, thinking about the words, all that needs attention, right? Without attention, there wouldn't be this communication, right, between the two of you. So between the attention to all that and the attention to what you just described, is that one more preferable to the other or more valuable than the other? Or?
Not really. Maybe I didn't notice, but it just...
But it's there. Now you understand that attention is there all the time. It's one of the universal chaitasikas.
Yeah, that's
right.
So is there attention now?
Yeah.
By yourself, by conditions.
Itself. Right, by condition, right.
At every moment.
Yes, right. But here we mean manasikara, right?
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Never I am attending. So
right.
When there's the idea of I'm attending to this or that, it's not understanding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Conditioned by attachment and idea of I can do.
Right.